This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're now listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Video games and esports have become an increasingly more prominent industry. Just in Southeast Asia, the gaming market is growing rapidly, with game revenues coming in at over $4.3 billion in 2019, a 14% growth on year. Now, beyond incumbents such as Electronic Arts and Blizzard Entertainment, big tech firms such as Alibaba, Tencent and Apple have been paying increasingly more attention here and investing in the sector. So if big tech cares about this scene, should you? To find out, today I speak with Justin Hulog, Southeast Asia General Manager for Riot Games, a wholly owned unit of Chinese internet giant Tencent and the maker of games such as League of Legends and Valorant. Justin, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Justin, I just want to kick things off with the impact of COVID-19. On the face of it, people staying at home seems to have accelerated the rise of the gaming industry, with the playing of video games going up around 75% during the initial weeks of quarantine in some cases. How has it played out for Riot Games?
So I'll definitely say that we are not immune to the disruption caused by the pandemic, especially around esports, right? We've had to make several adjustments to our live events. A lot of our offline community engagements have been canceled, and that's primarily because we're thinking about the safety and well-being of our players. That said, we've definitely seen a lot more interest and a lot more engagement within our games, both in terms of time spent as well as the time spent like watching games, right? So we've seen that global viewership has increased by 10% on our games on Twitch, 15% on YouTube Gaming. And as we've launched new games to keep our fans and our new players engaged, we're now really, really seeing that there's a lot more people that are just super excited about playing our games and about spending time inside the worlds that we're creating.
And have you seen those numbers in terms of engagement? Have they moderated downwards or remained stable or maybe even risen during the last few weeks?
We've actually seen them stay relatively stable. Although, to be frank, like they did go up and they were higher than what we were sort of expecting. I can't share the exact numbers, but in terms of what our projections were, I think that the pandemic has definitely played a large part in both the number of hours that people are spend playing games and the number of hours that people spend watching other people play games. Just anecdotally, just in terms of the region and also thinking about my own family, right? People within my family, like my little sister, who has never really picked up a game before, is spending a lot more time, playing video games now that the pandemic has hit.
Yes, and I have to admit that I am also one of those people who's playing more video games during this time. now, I want to spend some time on esports as well. You were talking about the impact then, how you've had to adapt. Now, are there still events going on? And if so, how have you changed it to keep people safe?
So to answer the question, like we definitely have had to change the way that we're thinking about our own operations and thinking differently about the ways that we are launching and managing our events here in Southeast Asia. For example, the Pacific Championship Series, of which the second split just started on, I think it was Saturday the 20th. We've had to move that to an online format. And so that's really allowed us to kind of think through how we were able to make sure that we're able to hit and deliver the experience to all the viewers that we need to deliver to, while also being really conscious about the fact that social distancing makes it impossible for people to meet in person. And I think that what's really interesting about it is that, for the most part, the event that we're showing is something that takes place online anyway, and people are used to being online. So to a certain extent, it's kind of natural for fans of esports to start wanting to watch these events on whatever platform they're most interested in watching it.
So Justin, could you give me some context there in terms of the revenue split, or at least the importance between gaming revenue and esports?
I'll tell you, I can't share sort of the exact numbers in terms of the split, but I'll tell you that for the most part, I treat them, at least within my team, as two separate business units that have different revenue streams and different ways of recognizing that revenue, right? For on the game side, the majority of our revenue comes primarily from skins, and skins are essentially, for those of you that are not super familiar with the way that freemium games work, games are usually free to play players essentially buy completely optional pieces of content that are primarily cosmetic. And the game companies are able to support those games through the purchases of that optional content, which usually doesn't have any impact on the gameplay. It's just, I like to describe it to my parents who are not super into video games as, you know, we sell clothes essentially that people can choose to buy or not buy, right? On the esports side, the revenue is very traditionally like tied to, it's very similar, I think, to a traditional sports model where, you know, the primary ways that we monetize are either by selling sponsorships or through advertising, right? Monetizing off of the actual views online. And so in that sense, there's a completely different team in place that thinks through how we create the products that work best because the customers are different, right? Like we are, you know, serving esports to our viewers, but the people who are providing the revenue tend to be larger multinational companies, such as Mercedes, for example, such as MasterCard, that are interested in buying and sponsoring events.
So on that note, actually, like many other industries, the gaming industry's business model has changed over the years. It used to be that the revenue came in from game sales, basically buying games that that publishers made. But we're seeing the rise of, I think you described it, the freemium model and in-game purchases. Why has this business model taken off instead of something like a Netflix business model, the subscription model?
You know, I've heard a lot of discussions about why this has risen, why this model has become more valuable and why it's become more interesting. And I think that Southeast Asia has had an enormous part to play in this. You know, as someone who's, you know, from the Philippines and as someone who kind of grew up playing a lot of video games, often the barrier to entry to playing games was that you'd have to pay that first big box, you know, price in order to play games. Mobile gaming has really democratized our ability to play games. You know, like anyone can play any game as long as they have a phone that has the right spec. And what I think has made it really, but really what kind of keeps people in a game, I think, is the social component, right? When I was 12 and you were playing, say, call it Legends of Zelda or something like that, right? You were playing alone. Like, sure, there were people around you, but for the most part, it was you in a world by yourself exploring that world, you know. The games of the future now, you're playing with your friends. You're playing with real friends. And so the freemium model works because even if you aren't the one that's purchasing or paying for content directly, you are contributing to the health of that ecosystem by providing a strong social space that people want to be a part of. And so, you know, the larger the game, the more people there are. And even if a relatively low number of people are monetizing, they are getting a lot out of it because of the large number of players that are engaging in the game.
We were talking about esports earlier. Now, that's another big revenue generator. And I think in 2017, it was estimated that around $700 million, that was how much revenue was generated globally. And that was expected to be about $1.5 billion this year. However, taking into consideration the disruption to the sport and the wider macroeconomic concerns, what kind of damage could we see to this side of the business in 2020 or beyond?
I think that, you know, both we and other companies are bearing the brunt of that impact now. And it's because if you think about who are the customers that are supporting us there, the customers tend to be large multinational companies that are looking to spend their advertising dollars on supporting, you know, supporting a sport, essentially, right? And a lot of that money, I think, has shifted and is being deferred or is no longer there as a result of the pandemic. So our business is definitely feeling that side of it. That said, I do think that we are a little bit more isolated than or insulated than a traditional sport, simply because we're able to pivot into more online methods of delivery. And whatever advertising money is still out there, you know, people are interested in gaming, people are interested in, you know, still participating in events where there's a lot of engagement, and we have that engagement now. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, I have to tell you that, yes, we are also impacted on that side of the business, especially from you know, benefiting from some of the dollars or some of the money that otherwise would go towards live events or towards advertising.
Yeah. Have any of your sponsors pulled out from any of the events that you've got going on?
We've had a couple, yes. So earlier in the year, I would have said no. And then recently we've had a few that have asked to defer some of the spend that they were planning for this year to next year or who have pulled out. And so we're starting to see more and more of that happening. That said, there are new people that are coming in and that are particularly interested in online formats. And as we kind of think about our future, we're spending a lot more time trying to think about how can we sort of insulate ourselves from any future disruptions by delivering more events online.
Justin, on a wider basis, Tencent took a 93% stake in Riot Games back in 2011 and took the company fully in 2015. What kind of synergies are there between Riot Games and the larger Tencent ecosystem?
So for the most part, we operate fairly independently from Tencent. Tencent, I think, bought us because they liked what we were doing and think that we have a lot to bring to the table. And so they and I don't think it's a secret also that Tencent has lots of investments all over the video game industry, right, with many, many other companies. And so for the most part, when, you know, we have had a super positive relationship with Tencent, and we've definitely been allowed to kind of operate very independently in terms of how we think about not just our operations, but also what we develop, how we develop it, and the experiences that we deliver to our players. What I'll tell you and where we've learned a lot from Tencent is in form factors that we previously haven't considered in the past. And I think we're starting to see that this year in terms of how we're thinking about mobile, right? League of Legends was a PC-only game for the past 10 years, you know? And this is the first year that we're really starting to consider delivering strong mobile experiences in Legends of Runeterra, Wild Rift, which is another game that's coming out. And then, you know, we're also considering that for a number of other games that are in the pipeline, which I can't quite talk about yet. And we've learned a lot from Tencent in terms of thinking through how we are able to develop and share those experiences with players.
Right, Justin, we're going into a few messages right now, but when we come back, we'll be taking a look at Riot Games' presence in the region and potential growth, as well as what's next for Riot Games. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking to Justin Hulock, Southeast Asia General Manager for Riot Games, the maker of Valorant and League of Legends. Now, as it stands, what is Riot Games' most important market in the Southeast Asian region?
Oh, it's like you're asking me to choose which one of my children is the favorite. And honestly, like I think that all of the markets are critical and important and in really different ways. And I think that Southeast Asia in general is a really, really critical region for us. And it's our intention to invest and really grow this region over the next few years. Probably what one thing that I would tell you in terms of the relative importance is that it's not just about revenue. Every region has its own, you know, there are regions, for example, that are that may have lower revenue but have enormous player bases, right? And so we think about how we can deliver first-class experiences to all of those players because, as I mentioned earlier, our business model is one where our games really benefit from very, very large player bases, whether you're paying or not, right? And so being able to support a super healthy ecosystem ultimately makes all of our games successful.
The Southeast Asian region, a lot of times it's just compiled into one region, but it's actually very diverse, from growing in Thailand to Indonesia to Vietnam or even Malaysia. What are some of the critical differences between these countries that you've had to adapt to?
Oh, I'll tell you. So I actually started working at Riot because I wanted to move back to Asia, right, after having been in the US for a long time. And after 6 months of living in Asia, I made the decision to relocate myself and a large portion of my team back to LA to sit closer with the research and development teams so that as we developed our games, we were thinking about some of the critical issues that make Southeast Asia so unique, right? So one of the things that I think is important, which is probably the most obvious, is localization and how you think about localizing and creating content both in-game and out-of-game in the languages that really matter for folks, right? And sometimes I think, for those of us who live here, it can be very obvious, you know. But for those of us who don't spend as much time in the region or don't have as much familiarity in the region, it's really hard, for example, to know how do you localize, when do you localize, you know, what is the relative level of fluency in a given language, you know. In a country like Thailand, for example, localizing in perfect Thai is really, really critical, right? Because it's actually really, really important to make sure that you're kind of delivering an experience that people can read that is really, really high quality. Whereas, you know, in a country like the Philippines where I'm from, like my first language was not Tagalog. My first language was Ilocano. After that, I learned Tagalog. And then after that, I learned English. My best language at this point is probably English, you know. And depending on who you ask, there are 90 to 110 dialects slash languages in the Philippines. And so like Taglish actually is a useful language to think about localizing it. Another example that I think we have to think about that's really, really different from many other markets is payments, you know? And I think in the West, especially for Western developers, there's an expectation that everyone has a credit card or access to a credit card. And that's simply just not as true in Southeast Asia, right? If you're in Indonesia, you might be looking at things like bank transfers or purchasing through other sites like Koda Shop or using carrier billing. You know, you may also be thinking about purchasing content through places like 7-Elevens or through many other outlets that just quite frankly aren't as intuitive to Western publishers. And so like these areas in particular, I think are ones where we really have to work with our development team to make sure that we are designing quite frankly, like a lot of boring backend things to make sure that our players are supported adequately.
What are some of the localizations that you had to make for the Malaysian market, if any?
So we are localizing into Bahasa Melayu, and we are definitely, which is something that we're already doing for League of Legends, but we're doing that for Wild Rift. You know, we're also considering now thinking about whether or not it makes sense for us to localize into simplified Chinese, just given sort of the number of players here in Malaysia that speak Chinese, right? And then, of course, you know, when we think about our out-of-game localizations, we really think about how do we make sure that we are hiring the right people, and specifically, how are we hiring Malaysians who are familiar with Malaysian marketing to tailor our global campaigns adequately, and in a way that will really resonate with players.
Anecdotally, we understand that Southeast Asia is a very important market, but how important is it?
I'll tell you that right now, for Southeast Asia is probably one of the top three priorities for Riot, for Riot globally in terms of making sure that we land this region properly. And I think we're making a number of investments in the region that point to that. First, we're self-publishing all of our own games, which was historically something that we had not done before. Two, we're growing our publishing team here, as well as opening a studio here, which will, you know, allow us to have not just the presence on the player-facing side, on the marketing side, but also in terms of having closer ties to the region as we think about developing our new games. And then I think that the other thing too is that we're really thinking about like how we connect and create more interesting experiences for Southeast Asian players. And I think that a big portion of that, quite frankly, is learning is a PC company that is interested in becoming more mobile focused, right? And Southeast Asia is definitely a region where mobile is the preferred platform. And so we want to learn from our players in terms of thinking about how we deliver those experiences.
Right. Now, just considering the relative size of the Southeast Asian market, in the grand scheme of things, how does the Malaysian market or the potential growth in Malaysia play into that larger plan?
I think Malaysia is one of those markets that has an enormous amount of potential. And once again, I can't share the exact numbers. But what I'll tell you is that when we think about Malaysia, we're really thinking also about like just reaching an enormous amount of players that we haven't been able to reach in the past, you know, who are very mobile savvy, who we know play a lot of video games, who are particularly interested in the mobile genre, you know. So Malaysia for us is one of the markets, especially given how close it is to Singapore, right? One of the markets where we're really thinking about how we're making like bigger and broader investments. And some of those investments, for example, are thinking about how we partner with telcos, thinking about how we partner with different players, thinking about how we partner with universities. There's a couple of things that that we can't quite announce yet because we haven't fully finalized them. But those kinds of partnerships are what I think will help to tailor it to the local market.
Now, Justin, looking forward, we were talking about the mobile gaming scene earlier, and that's something I think you've said you've learned from Tencent. You're particularly big in the PC scene, that's no surprise. But what is the trajectory for the mobile gaming scene? Because in Southeast Asia, it's about 69% of overall game revenue. How are you planning to tap into the rapidly growing number of smartphone users in the region?
Well, so we are launching a game called Wild Rift soon. And Wild Rift is essentially a mobile version of League of Legends that is only playable on mobile phones, basically, right? We have very high hopes for that game, especially for Southeast Asia. We know that Southeast Asians love myself included, love mobile MOBAs. And so that game, I think, has a lot of potential, right? In addition, I think we're starting to think about making sure that most of the games that we're creating are cross-platform and or have mobile components. So Legends of Runeterra is a CCG that you can primarily play, that you can play on both mobile and on PC. Most players in Southeast Asia, without getting to specific numbers, prefer to play on mobile, right? And that, I think, is a really kind of critical step for us. And then, you know, I think that the other thing that I had mentioned earlier is that we are opening a studio here in Singapore. A lot of the studio, you know, folks will come from the region, which will inherently allow us to think about how we deliver mobile experiences and create mobile experiences in ways that are more intuitive, right? So that's one big thing that we are thinking about.
Now, speaking of your games, your latest game, I think, is Valorant, and it went live in the region at the start of the month. What kind of traction has it seen in this region?
We've actually seen a lot of exciting energy around Valorant. And, you know, I'm going to be really honest. Like, I was a little bit concerned because for a PC game to launch in Southeast Asia at a time when, you know, many PC cafes are closed for reasons out of anyone's control. It was really concerning for me personally, right, in terms of thinking about the success of the game. But what we've actually found is that, you know, once again, without being able to divulge the specific numbers, Valorant has really created quite a stir in the community. And we're seeing a lot of traction in places where we frankly didn't expect to see traction yet, right? And I think that a lot of that has to be because, you know, people are really excited for a new game that has a strong social component. People are super excited about a new FPS that are a new first-person shooter where, you know, they can get involved and play with their friends. And I think people are really excited to kind of see what the second act of Riot looks like in a world that isn't based on the League of Legends universe.
So that's, I think you've beaten me to the punch then. I was going to ask you whether Valorant represents the future of Riot Games, really. Now, League of Legends has been the biggest part of the business for the last few years. How important is Valorant going to be for you over the next 5 years?
Oh, I think Valorant is going to be very, very important and is going to be critical. But I think, you know, inherent in that question is, does Valorant's importance somehow diminish the importance of League of Legends? And I think that the answer for me is no, right? One of the unique things about Riot, which I think is very, very odd for not just a game company, but for any game company, is that we really don't think of our games having a finite cycle or having a date when they expire, you know? And I think that that's a really, you know, on one hand, brave, and on the other hand, kind of crazy approach to thinking about a product, you know, is trying to design products that have no end. And all of the different experiences that we're creating, so Wild Rift, which is the mobile MOBA, Legends of Runeterra, which is the CCG, and then some of the other experiences that are coming out through Forge, are extensions of that broader League of Legends universe, you know. So we are definitely going to make investments in that world and then believe that all of those different touch points will help to strengthen the core PC game. That said, Valorant as a completely new world with a completely new IP and a completely new set of experiences to explore is something that I think is going to be really, really exciting for people and for our players. And I have every intention of making sure that we're making the right investments into making sure that it's as big as it can be in Southeast Asia.
All right, Justin, on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for your time.
I was speaking to Justin Hulog, Southeast Asia General Manager for Riot Games, and this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanasan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.